Right. Hello and welcome to episode 36 of the Reptor Chat podcast, the only podcast in the UK that scratches that multi-species itch. From mangrove monitors to macaws, I aim to hit every obscure corner of exotic pet keeping. If you're new here, please consider whacking that like button, smashing the subscribe button and flicking the follow button. Obviously, leave a comment too. Before we get into today's guest, a few little updates. First up, Patreon. Let me find the button. Patreon. Thank you to the Patreon gang, or as I like to call you, the Repti Squad. We are growing nicely, and these guys get exclusive content, early access to videos, access to a private Discord. Oh, and I'm working on some sick... Oh, that's so cringy. I'm working on some stickers as well, which are Patreon exclusive. So if you want to know more, there's a link below. Tiers start at £2 a month. All the tiers get the same content. And there is a 7-day free trial as well, so you can join in, see what all the fuss is about before you pay any of your hard-earned cashes. Talking of Patreon, this has been live on Patreon for almost a week, or just over a week. That's right, I'm doing the YouTube-y thing. I've done a vlog. It'll be live next Saturday at 7 p.m. I don't know what the date will be. First Saturday of February. And there'll be a premiere on YouTube in a couple of days, so keep your eyes out for that. Let's see who's in the chat, if anyone, before we carry on. So who we got? We've got Hey Serenity, and we got Paul as well. Nice to see you guys. Did I have a tash earlier? Yes, I had it. No, I just grew it. No, I did. I need to have a shave. I also need a haircut, hence why I have got a hat on. But you know, as the kids are saying nowadays, we vibe. I don't know why I'm being so cringy today, to be honest. That's disgusting. I can't believe I just said that. Might have thrown up in my mouth a little bit. Anyway, in other news, if you've seen on my socials, I got my hand on three amazing little ackies from Paul named Charmander, Bulbasaur, and Squirtle. We are now just Charmander and Squirtle because Bulbasaur was being a bit of a dick, and he wanted nothing more to try and kill the other two. So he has now moved onto a friend's house just down the road, and he can live out his life being a dick all he wants, but he's not biting the other two that are here. So the two that are here are thriving, and they're getting bolder and bolder by the day. It's cool. There's an update on them coming soon. Not only that, the Gill and I have also settled into their much larger home, and they are loving life as well. They're slowly learning to put up with me, and they're even starting to tongue feed, which is honestly the coolest thing in the world. I got a reel earlier that I'll post on Instagram, probably after the podcast, so keep your eye out for that. Anyway, that's enough of me talking. Hang on, let's check on my comments quickly. What we're saying... Serenity is saying the stash is legit. My wife hates it. It won't be around for too long. Hey, Dan. Nice to see you here as well. Right. So, that's enough of me talking about me. Let's get on to what you guys are here for today, and that is today's guest. I'm sure you've seen the name pop up all over the socials. This guy is always around commenting and supporting, and not only supporting online creators, but also he's pretty hands-on with supporting. He's supporting his local community and the National Centre for Reptile Welfare as well, which we'll cover later. So without any further ado, let's have a please. Oh, well, I can't even speak. Let's have a warm welcome for Jay from RDJ Reptiles. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I am good. We had a little bit of a technical issue, and I wasn't sure if we were going to be there on time, but we are here, and everybody, to be fair, nobody even needed to know that, but it's always fun to share, isn't it? So how are you today, mate?
I'm good, thank you. I'm doing very well, thank you very much. Yourself?
I am well. I've had a really, really busy day. I've been running all the way around the countryside, but I'm here now. I wasn't even sure if I was going to make it, but I'm good. I'm good. I had to deliver some snakes and a rack, and then I picked up a Viv from Paul, and I had to take the work van back to work, and it's just been one thing after another today, but it's good now.
Non-stop. Non-stop.
It is. I was going to start building a tortoise table tomorrow as well, but I picked up all my wood that had been cut to size, and I got home, checked it all, and I haven't got any sides. So I don't know where they are. I've got to go back, but the timber merchants is closed till Monday now, so I won't be doing that tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's that. Anyway, enough about me. We are here to talk about you, mate. So I'm sure you've listened to the podcast before, but for those that haven't listened, I like to start the podcast with a little section I like to call the Get to Know. It's 10 quick-fire questions, which obviously I've updated for 2024, just to get the juices flowing. So, Jay, if you're ready, we'll get started.
Fire away.
Cool. So, first up, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Nice. Snakes or lizards?
Snakes.
Frogs or salamanders?
Frogs.
Centipedes or millipedes?
Millipedes.
Spiders or scorpions?
The wife's going to kill me. Spiders.
Birds or butterflies?
Butterflies.
Grasslands or woodland?
Woodland.
Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Hot climate or cold climate?
Cold climate.
And obviously the most important question of the entire podcast is, what is your favourite biscuit?
Do you know what? It's actually taken me a while to think about this. Funnily enough, this is the hardest question. It's got to be a chocolate hobnob.
Okay, yeah, I'm a big, big chocolate hobnob fan. They're like the little marines of the biscuit world.
Yeah. Sorry, but it's got to be a chocolate hobnob.
Like, I can completely agree with that. That is cool, man. So that is the get to know section. I'm sure everyone can't disagree with chocolate hobnob, to be fair.
It's got to be.
Yeah, definitely. So let's just get into it, really. Could you give us sort of a history lesson into your personal, for want of a better word, reptile keeping career, but not RDJ reptiles as they are, but just yourself?
Okay, so mine started when I got married. So when I got married to my wife, growing up, I was never... it was never an animal orientated house. We had a cat, but it was always as kids, can I have a giraffe or a hippopotamus? And parents say no. So when I got married, my wife was like, okay, we'll get you a bearded dragon. We'll start slowly.
Yeah.
And like I always tell everyone, they're the gateway animals, bearded dragons. Everybody starts with something like that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was, it was a bearded dragon, to be honest.
Yeah, and then how have you gone from the one beardy to sort of where you are today with obviously more than just one beardy?
More than just a beardy. So it was a good friend of ours, Gary and Vicky. They were the ones that introduced us to the National Centre of Reptile Welfare. And we started just volunteering there.
Okay.
The more you start handling the animals and cleaning them out, you go, oh, this one's nice. Oh, that one's nice. And then you come home with one, and then you come home with another one, and then another one.
I imagine being friends of a drug dealer, really. Like if you're around, if the drugs are there, you just start a little bit.
Just a little bit, and then more.
Reptiles are more expensive than drugs as well.
Oh, 100%.
Probably, I
think cow poles the strongest thing I've ever had.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I always look at it as, and I know quite a few people in the reptile community will know it as the Pokemon syndrome. Right. And I know you'll like that reference as much as I do. It is very much, you've got to catch them all.
I don't know what you mean.
And you just
there we go.
I'm sorry. This is for Paul.
But yeah, at least we're on the Crocs gang. Paul's in the comments as well. He's going to love that.
Of course he will. Mine's fluffy as well, so
that's always good to know. I sucked into the fluffy Crocs a couple of days ago because I was texting with a sale, but I was like, not doing it.
Got to be done. So it is very much you get one, then you get another one, then you go, oh, I've got a leopard gecko. That's lovely. Oh, actually, another one would do lovely. Oh, look, there's a different colour. There's a dwarf boa constrictor. I've not got one of those. Okay, I'll get one of those. And then it does just spiral on from there.
I think another way it spirals as well is you get a couple and then you go, oh, I wonder if I could breed these. And then that's like a whole nother tangent that just they expand as well. So you started with Beardy and then it snowballed much like it does for everybody else. I asked you, that was your sort of personal, but you are part of RDJ Reptiles, obviously. And I know that you are like the face, so to speak, but it's not just you. So give us a history lesson on RDJ Reptiles and then we'll carry on from there. So who are RDJ Reptiles?
So RDJ Reptiles, the initials are for Rowella, which is my wife, Daisy, which is my daughter, and then myself. So we actually started RDJ Reptiles as just an Instagram page. There was myself and my oldest nephew, Rowan. He's very much into reptiles like myself. So we started with just taking pictures and uploading them to an Instagram page.
Just
to share the love. I had ended up with some time off of work. And then Rowell had this grand idea of, well, we've got these animals. Why don't we start sharing our passion with other people? Why don't we use it to educate people in reptiles?
Okay. And how are you going to do that?
So what we're doing is when we go into fates and fairs, we're using that for a good platform to actually try and counteract the bad, but misinformation that everyone receives in the media. So it's very much just sort of trying to re-educate people, but also being there for when somebody has questions, being there to actually physically answer them. So we get people that will contact us via different bits and pieces, social media, websites or whatnot, or physically come and actually turn up at ours and ask us questions.
Yeah.
So we're quite happy to answer those, and we would rather that people did that than went on to, as helpful as it is, but Facebook and Instagram, and actually join these groups, and then people go, oh, well, that's not right, I do this. And it's just trying to weed out the wrong information.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for a lot of people, most of the sort of misinformation or their fears, it's all through just like, I don't know what the word is. What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. But they've never come into contact with the animals. It's all just like what they've been told, or like, for example, like the story where people go, oh, I know someone that had an uncle or an auntie and it was their brother's sister. They had a snake and it was measuring them up.
I love that one.
Every time I mention a snake, someone comes up with that story. And if you've got some snake, like when you say you go to like fates and fairs and stuff, being able to like show, especially kids as well, it's like, look, I find it, kids and normally grandparents as well, they're always like, they send the kids first and then they get like, oh, actually, I'd quite like to have a look as well. Hearsay is the word I was looking for. Thanks, Paul.
Yes. Yeah. It is very much hearsay, but also we have been fed the information by media. So I know me and you have spoken about the film before because we quite like it. Anaconda.
Yeah.
Such a fantastically awful film.
Yeah.
But it was all about that, that big bad snake. And it, you know, you're fed that. But more recently, even Snakes on a Plane.
It's one of my favourite films. And I sit and watch it with my wife and I'm like, that one's not venomous. That one's not venomous. That one's not venomous.
Yeah.
It makes me laugh so much.
Always. Always.
But if you're uneducated, they're just terrifying.
But even kids, you can go down to the Harry Potter films.
Yeah.
You've got the four houses. The evil house is Slytherin, which is a snake. You know, the tattoo that all the people have is a snake and a skull. It's you're being fed all this information, and it's just trying to teach people, actually, just think for yourself.
Yeah,
just like come and hold these animals.
The oldest story of all time, obviously in the Bible, Adam and Eve. It was the snake that tempted fate.
Yeah, so. the forbidden fruit. Yeah, no, exactly. And it's just trying to be that face that sits there and goes, but is it really?
Yeah.
You know, are they really going to size you up?
Yeah, like, look at this ball python. It sits there. It doesn't move. if you look at it, it'll hide away. It's not going to come out and try and eat you. It's not a vicious little animal.
Well, I don't know. I've got one of mine, Ekins. She's pretty vicious.
Yeah, there's always an exception to the rule, to be fair.
There's always one.
Sorry, I interrupted you a little bit. But so, RDJ is yourself, your wife, your daughter. You were going to, you mainly go to fairs and fates and things like that.
Fates, fairs, we do like private events as well. We do parties because some people want us to turn up, and it's more of an educational handling, and actually trying to teach them that if you're going to get these animals, they're going to be around for a long time.
Yeah,
it's not just 10 years, it's 15, 20, 25. So it's a big commitment, but it's also trying to just make sure that they just have the right information.
Yeah. So how did you go about sort of, I know you do, I don't know how to word what I'm trying to word. Hang on. With your events, let's call it just as an umbrella term, how did you sort of get into that? Because obviously you went from, like we all do, having a collection of animals at home. What made you take the step into doing the events and stuff? And how did you go about it? Do you need like insurance and stuff? I don't know how it works.
So I'd started, much like my wife and my nephews, sister-in-law, mother and father-in-law, they all help out. It's a big family thing. It's not just the three of us. It's quite a big group. And so we were volunteering for the National Centre of Reptile Welfare. So when they do events, we were doing it on their behalf.
Right.
Okay. Under their name, their insurance and their banner.
Yeah.
And then when we started saying about making our DJ official, as it were, you have to look up public liability insurance. You have to become a registered company. So we're actually on Company House. You have to make sure that you go to your local authority and say to them, this is what we want to do.
Yeah.
And we have the local authority that turn up to our house and look at all the enclosures and basically say they give us the thumbs up to do the job.
Right. Okay. No worries.
So you have
like a animals activity. Is it animals activity?
Animals activity and exhibition license.
Yeah,
that is, and it's got a list of what species we're allowed to use and how many. And then if we get any more animals in, we have to speak to the local authority and get it amended. They come round and do another check just to make sure we're up standard.
Okay. And then when you do events and stuff, are there specific animals that you are allowed to take? Or are there specific animals that people are allowed to handle? Or is that more of a choice that you guys make, depending on the animal itself?
It's more of a choice. So if we're doing, we've done a couple of school lessons. So we're going to a couple of schools and we've done year one and year two. You're not going to take a 12-foot snake to a group of little kids because that's clearly going to, you know, scare them. But so we always tailor the animals that we take to the event. So if it's going to be, we did a dog show last year. Again, I'm not going to take a big snake, but I might take my Tegu.
Yeah, okay. That's basically a dog anyway.
You know, so... It is. Oh, yeah. Hands down it is. But it's just making sure that we take the right animals. And if we go to take a royal python and they're in shed or they're a little bit moody, then we won't take them.
Yeah.
because all you're going to do is take an animal out into the public that is more likely to have a negative effect on the public.
Yeah, not to mention like if it's in shed or it'll stress the animal out as well. So picking the animals for the day. It makes sense. You mentioned bull python, you mentioned tegu, you mentioned a few different animals. What I'm gonna ask you now, what do you keep at home? What have you got? Okay. I should have pre-warned you so you could run this.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so we've got bearded dragons, crested geckos, gargoyle geckos, leopard geckos, pixie frog, tegu, Burmese python, California kingsnakes, sand boas, carpet python, super dwarf reticulated python, which I know if anybody follows, they've probably seen.
Yeah.
Savannah monitor, royals, boas, corn snakes. The iguana, Ziggy the iguana. So he's a pet only, so he's an old boy. Yeah. So he's come to us to basically wear his old people's home. And then we've got our Salcutta tortoise pancake, which again is the same thing. We take it on as a welfare case for the centre.
Yeah. So a huge variety of animals there. I'm sure they keep you on your toes all the time as well.
Oh, yes.
Something like you and I, Paul was asking, what part of the country are you in, Joe?
I'm in Kent.
There you go, Paul.
So Gravesend, Rochester sort of area, if he knows Kent.
I'm sure he does. He's from down south, and we all know it roughly.
It's from down south.
So something you've mentioned to me a few times. I don't know if I've seen it on your socials, but I know me and you have spoken about it just in the chat. Is Welfare Corner?
Yes.
What is Welfare Corner at home, Joe?
That's my wife. My wife loves a broken case. So what happens is at the National Centre, where there are volunteers that come in, because it's purely volunteer-based, apart from Chris Newman and one or two others, it's all volunteers that come in and just give their time just to clean out racks and vivs and, all the other bits and pieces. So what happens is when some of the animals come in that need a constant one-to-one for just feeding them up, if they're underfed, malnourished, if they have metabolic bone disease, or they're just really, really tiny, my wife decides to bring them home, and we have our dining room is not a dining room, it's Welfare Corner. So you have a big stack of vivariums. So they are all ones that we've basically fostered from the centre. We feed them up, make sure that we do a lot of work with them, get to know the animals a little bit more. So when we hand them back, we can go, right, there you go.
Yeah, okay. So lots of cases that need a lot. Like you said, one-to-one, sort of watching more than just checking in once a day. They need it sort of almost immediate care all the time.
Yes. So one that we've got at the moment is Nugget, which is a leopard gecko. We don't get into morphs because in the nicest way, I don't really care what they look like.
Yeah.
It's just making sure the animals are happy.
Yeah.
So he has metabolic bone disorder, and he has slack jaw as well. So he's got an issue. He's got no pressure in his jaw.
Right. Okay.
So he bites you and it's just like there's nothing there.
Yeah.
So my wife ends up feeding him wax worms, crushes down moria worms for him to try and get the nutrients into his body. But then when you hold him, it feels like he's actually not got a spine or a rib cage. It's such a sorry case. But this is where people have got the animals and then they don't have the correct information.
Yeah.
Or they go to a pet shop and they're not a reptile specialist.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's the broad spectrum pet jobs.
Yeah. And there's, it's going to be a problem for a long time yet, I think. But there's so much old information and misinformation online as well that sometimes people think they're doing what's right for the animal and they've just been misinformed. And a lot of, I want to say a lot, but once someone's got, like, say they're only having one leopard gecko, and they've done their research. I'm struggling to get my words out today, but if they're not fussed about getting more animals, once that one leopard gecko is set up and they've gone, well, I've done what the shop's told me to do, or I've done what the one care sheet I've read is, they're not going to then change it or improve it. They'll just go, oh, I don't know what's wrong with the animal now.
No, exactly. There's, you also get the older generation of reptile keepers who go, oh, but I did this when I was younger. But as we know, and I know that you've gone through the change yourself, where you go from a racking system and you've gone, actually, I don't like that anymore.
Yeah.
So it's moving with the new information that we have, because as we progress down that line of finding out what is better for the reptiles.
Yeah.
And if we don't move with that, we then fall back, and then we become, I don't want to say as if we neglect them, but we just stand still. There's no movement in what we learn.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think sometimes that the animals are neglected, it's not deliberate neglect, but it is, I would say it is still neglect. Like, obviously, but some people aren't doing it. It's like someone that's got a really fat dog. Like, they're just killing it with kindness. Like, they think they're doing the right thing, but it's not. But the more we chat like this, and hopefully some people listen and people learn and go, like, there's always room for improvement. And even like the guys that are doing like I can't think of any proper words today. It's doing my head. And the guys that are like doing the groundbreaking stuff, they don't break the ground and go, oh, we're done now. They go, oh, we've done that. Now, how can we make that better? And that's what I think as reptile keepers, we should all be doing. And I think that a lot of people in the UK, I don't know about worldwide, but a lot of people in the UK are slowly seeing that sort of, seeing the light, so to speak. Because I've quite a few people that I know are in the process of basically rethinking their entire reptile keeping careers.
Definitely. I think there's a renaissance, but I don't really think that's the right word. But there are a lot of people that I know also that you speak to as well. So, you know, that have gone through this change and they've gone, oh, the racking system. That's not for me anymore. And they're taking this new approach, and it's lovely because I watch a lot of the YouTube videos. I won't name drop people. Paul's Monitor and Riddler.
Don't name them.
Oh, okay. All right. So don't name Riddler, because he's probably never here on time.
He's never here.
I know. Tell me about it. But watching those videos is lovely, because it's seeing the glint in their eye when they go, this is brilliant. And for me, when I do our events, seeing that little glint in people's eyes, that's me paid.
Yeah.
For me, that's what I do it for.
Yeah.
Is that little twinkle in their eye, and they go, wow. Yeah. Like, excellent. Thank you so much. That's wonderful.
I definitely think there's a
new, we're taking a step forward now, which is brilliant.
It definitely feels like that. Like, I've been keeping reptiles since I was 14, I think. So like 16, 17 years. And
I thought you were going to say four.
No. I've lost my train of thought now. So yeah, I can't remember. And I think in the last 4-5 years, sort of like 2019, just before COVID, obviously COVID happened, lots of people were at home, spent time. And since then, like, don't get me wrong, the market spiked and it was ridiculous for a while. But now it's coming back down, and the people that are sticking with it are going, Okay. And there seems to be a huge push for improving everything all of a sudden, whereas before it was like, this works, get a Billy bookcase from IKEA and turn it into a rack. I don't know if that's just my view because I was very much just in the Royals, or if it's happening as a whole. But from what I can see, being like sort of, I almost feel like a complete newbie again now. I've started with like, I've got the monitors and I'm not keeping Royals anymore. It's quite exciting, to be fair. I'm loving it.
You've got bitten by the lizard, have you?
Actually, to be fair, no. I haven't actually been bitten. By it. But yeah, the Odatry that Paul, that I got from Paul, so the Gilani and the Akis. Check me out using big words. Yeah, honestly, they've just stolen my heart. I literally get home from work and spend hours just staring at them. I don't even have to do anything. I can just stand or sit on the floor and just stare at them, and I absolutely love it.
Roellas. The morning geckos are amazing. But Roellas, my wife, she's gone and bought home an Aki monitor, and she just absolutely adores it. Adores it. But we've got two chameleons as well, and she loves them. She's fallen in love with them as well. So, which is fantastic, because, God blimey, a couple of years ago, she wouldn't even let me look at her. You know, look at a reptile or, you know, and then suddenly here we are, you know, doing this, which is amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So what we got, let's just gonna have a look in the comments quickly, because there seems to be quite a lot going on. What we got, Paul is saying he's a fake fan. I think we're talking about Riddler, and he's saying that he should, we should just leave Riddler behind with the racks. You're probably not wrong. So when he's saying Riddler is a mystery. Honestly, I'm always there for Riddler. He never turns up for these. Ever. No, it's all right, though. Fiona said, where's the comment? I can't find it. Very, very late, gang, but she is here, so we appreciate that. Thank you very much, V. Hope you're having a good day.
Well, she's very, very late, but she's here, so.
Exactly. I prefer late but here than, you know, not ever.
Not at all.
Paul is saying he's currently sat waiting for Toad to come out while listening, and he has that glint in his eye. And honestly, I can't understand why. I was nipped round to Paul's earlier to pick up a Viv, and I got to hand feed Raven his Black Tree monitor. That's right, everyone. I got to do it before anybody else. And honestly, it was so cool. I was driving home like, could I squeeze a tree monitor in anywhere at home? And honestly, it was absolutely incredible. So thanks, Paul, for letting me do that, because
Yes, it was awesome.
No, I can't. Not at the moment. Maybe in the future, but I've got to build tortoise tables and all sorts at the moment. Paul was saying that he's got a special Aki for rehome at the moment. I've met the Aki. It's very nice. So, you know, yeah, just think about that.
Yeah, okay. I know the wife's probably watching this, so, yeah. He could speak to her about that.
Yeah, no worries. I'm sure you guys have got each other on social media, so that's all I'm going to say about that. I don't want to get in. So, as we're doing a lot of stuff about the NCRW, National Centre for Reptile Welfare, what, I know we've spoken sort of briefly about what you do, but what do you do at the National Centre for Reptile Welfare? And we've already sort of covered how it started, but how did you sort of get into it? If people are local to it and they want to start, how can they get involved?
So it's connected to Hadlow College, which is Tunbridge Way. So Chris Newman is the director. He's the one that actually started it all of 5-6 years ago. He has many fingers in many pies. He's alongside with Reptar. He also knows lots of people from the responsible reptile keeping as well. So Chris has been around for, he'll kill me, donkey's years. But he's very, very good at what he does. So what he's done is he's taken a building that the college wasn't actually using and gone, right, I'm going to make this the home of reptile rehoming. So he has, I call it an underground network of people where if you have an animal and you can't look after it, not won't, but can't,
yeah,
you can contact him and he will find this little network and get the animal to him.
Yeah, I've seen it work now, on Facebook before. He like pops up a comment like, there's a lizard that's coming onto bananas. It's at the top of Scotland. And within like 25 minutes, it's got a chain of people that will get it to wherever it needs to go. It's incredible.
It's absolutely fantastic. But the building that they're in is at maximum capacity.
Yeah.
I was down there today and they've had 12 snakes, 10 leopard geckos turn up. And it's from where somebody was breeding them and just decided they weren't going to do it anymore. So he then has to find space for these 22 reptiles and then find homes for them.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting being, and I know that we've had brief chats about this before, is sort of being on sort of like different ends of the, you know, where you were breeding and then we're doing the rehoming bit. So, it, you know, it's different ends of the, you know, the chain, but it's just trying to find the right homes for these animals. So when we go down there, we clean out the vivariums, handle the animals, you know, get them used to in a positive way of being handled. You know, obviously we can't handle all of them. But I mean, last year, I think they ended at 2,000. I think it was just under 2,700 reptiles that have come through the door.
Yeah. And they're not all like animals that have been surrendered or dumped or handed in. Like, I know you get like ones that have been, well, I suppose the ones that have been found in the wild are sort of dumped, but like you get the ones that come in.
Stowaways.
Yeah. Stowaways. You get cases where sometimes people have died and then they've got to find somewhere for the animals as well, but there
exactly
are
so
abandons as well, aren't there?
So in regards to people who pass away and they have reptiles or animals, Chris is actually working on something to basically make sure that animal is taken care of.
So
I don't want to go into too much of a detail, but there are bits and pieces they're trying to put in place to make sure that, especially like tortoises and stuff like that, that will go for hundreds of years.
A long time. That's like animal for three generations, isn't it? At least.
So it's just making sure that animal is taken care of. Because if my cell cutter, I love him. Daisy loves him. If Daisy has children, they might not give two hoots about reptiles. Yeah. So then what do you do with his tortoise?
We've got two Horsfield tortoises and they're not very old. They're like, 5-6 years old each. So I said that they'll stay with me until I die. But after that, they'll probably go to my youngest daughter if she wants them. And hopefully she will. She loves them at the moment. But obviously a lot of things change and you don't know where. But I'd love a big tortoise, like a Soulcutter, an Aldabra or something like that. But one, I haven't got the space at the moment to have one. But I think a small like Horsfield tortoise, someone can inherit that and they can live with it. Like it's 6 to 8 inches. If I was to get a Soulcutter or something like that, I'd go, oh, Ben's passed away. Also, here's a 100-kilo tortoise. Please look after it.
Yes. Yeah. Here's something that weighs the size of an old classic mini.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've been fortunate enough to see some Aldabra tortoises up close, and they are tanks.
Yeah.
Absolute tanks, but they're fantastic.
Definitely. Like we've seen the Galaps at Crocodiles of the World a couple of times. I know Aldabra is a bit smaller.
Brilliant. Than
those, but even so, like,
yes.
I think the big tortoises, they have some like sort of demeanor about them. I don't know if that's the right word, like a aura, and you can just sense that they like they've been here for a long time. They don't care, like they're really cool and they're really calm and just chill. And I absolutely love them. They remind me of there's an animated tortoise in a film. I can't remember what film it is, and he just does everything at like a snail's pace. And they're just they are just like that in real life. They're so cool.
Until you put food down.
Yeah, and then they're like bulldozers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also found out that it really hurts when they bite you. Like, one of my horse fields bit me when it was about a year old. So a year old horse field is probably, I don't know, as round as the bottom of a mug. So like, they're small. And oh my God, that hurts so much. Like, I've been bitten by like fully grown royals. Like, it's still not a big snake, but a 5 foot royal hurts when it bites you. Oh my God, this tiny little tortoise. I was like on the verge of tears.
That's something special when something like that bites you.
Yeah, Kung Fu Panda, that's the tortoise.
Oh, Kung Fu Panda. Yeah. There you go. Thank you so much for that input.
Question actually up here. Where is it? He says, "Oh, a question for you, Jay. What's your opinion on breeders, especially breeding very common species? So, like things like royals, leopard geckos, beardies, cresties."
What's my thought on it? Done correctly, I don't see a problem with it at all. And this is me, you know, from my point of view, not company or anything like that. I see no problem with it at all. It's when it's done and you end up with lots of high end stuff that then nobody can sell, nobody wants to buy. So it's okay having these banana, lavender, henchy, double clef something, whatever morph, that's worth £2,000. But is there actually somebody that will pay £2,000 for it?
Yeah.
And to get that special morph, how many are you going to have that aren't that morph? So, you know, yourself, you've bred royals before. If you wanted a pied, because I know that was one thing that you were after, to get that pied, how many have you had that aren't pied? And then what do you do with them just to get that one pied? But the one thing that I feel as a country, this might not come across right, but British people suck at breeding.
I thought you were just going to stop at suck, to be honest.
I've
offended an entire nation there. Take it back.
No, that's right. That's fine. I'd rather you did than I did. But no, I do think we do suck at breeding. It's the, I'm going to get the minimum size for this animal, or I'm going to breed these dogs and they're going to be in the smallest cage possible. You end up like with puppy farms and stuff like that. Well, actually, you can end up with snake farms as well, where people just want to churn out loads of snakes. So I think that, I mean, this sort of comes back to the whole Renaissance. I think if it's done in smaller batches, then we're not going to flood the market with lots of snakes.
Yeah.
If we don't flood the market with lots of snakes,
I know we said species in general, like very popular species in general, but they always end up coming back to royals. And I think one of them, like, there's like 7,000 royals on just the UK morph market at the moment, and no one's buying them.
No. But then if they're not buying them, people have got to keep them. And when they're done keeping them, where do they go?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And like, I'm not throwing hate at any royal keepers. Because I've had a couple of people recently saying, "Oh, your podcast was good," and now it's turned into, "Oh, I hate racks and I hate royals," which I don't. I still really like royals. The reason I got rid of mine is because I couldn't decide. I didn't want to keep one. If they were going, they were all going. But I completely agree. Like, I don't have any issues with people breeding. Doesn't bother me. Like, if people want to breed an animal. But it's when they're breeding 20 royals. Like, if you breed 20 royals in 1 year to get 20 clutches, an average clutch is 6. Someone do the maths, but it's a lot. Like, there's 120 babies on average. There we go. God, quick maths, Ben. I hope that was right.
well done.
If you've got 120 babies, no one's buying them. You've got to keep those 120 babies, or they end up all going to like reptile rescues, like the National Centre for Reptile Welfare, or I'm quite close to the Brighton RSPCA, but I don't really like the RSPCA, so let's talk about that better. But the National Centre for Reptile Welfare, they all get full up very quickly from people that are mass producing. And it pretty much is like a snake farm, or at points it was like a beardie farm. I know beardies aren't as popular at the moment. Yep. They are popular, but I remember like when I was sort of, when I first started keeping, say like 2008, 2009 sort of time, beardies were like 10 quid. You couldn't get rid of them because everyone was breeding them. And then all of a sudden, everyone stopped breeding beardies. And for like 4 or 5 years, there weren't baby beardies around, and they shot up in price. But I wonder what happened to all those 10, 15 quid beardies, and how many of them actually even made it to adulthood. Because you don't, behind closed doors, you don't know what people are doing.
No, but also, you know, I say back then, years back, you know, I mean, I know we're sitting in different parts of the, I say different parts of the country, but, you know, different parts. And we're talking over the internet, and there's people commenting from other parts and seeing us from other parts. Information is so quickly thrown out there.
Yeah.
But still, people are getting animals that don't have the right information. I did a birthday party, and the young boy had an absolutely amazing time, and he said, "Oh, have a look at my crested gecko." So I had a look, and the vivarium was lovely. It was a little bioactive setup. He'd done his research, and then he had an LED light at the top and a heat mat on the side.
Yeah,
because that's what he was told by the pet shop.
Yeah,
would be suitable.
It's mad. And I don't understand it as well. Like, from a, like, if I was owning a pet shop, from solely a business point of view, Paul, I'll get to your comment in a second. From solely a business point of view, surely it's better to sell. I don't know if to be fair, right? I'm going to preface this by saying I don't know if the pet shops know that they're doing it wrong all the time. Sometimes they just don't know. But if you go into like a pet shop, and they go, right, I want to buy, for example, let's go for a Christie. Oh, you need a heat mat and an LED light. Surely they're better off going, you need a thermostat and a halogen and an LED light. LED's fine. But that way, they're making more money because the things are more expensive in the first place. And you're going to get a repeat customer because the bulbs blow as well. I don't understand the point of them selling, like, skimpy stuff like the oh it'll do when they might as well try and push the stuff in the first place, I suppose. But then what's
so
also, I, like, if you can get a I, sale if you sell an animal do you sell an animal don't you I don't get it
okay so I do get what Paul's saying completely. I speak from 8 years worth of car sales history, being a car salesman. Yeah, sales are sale. But if you don't follow it up and you don't do the after stuff, then they're not going to come back. You know, yes, a sale's a sale. Completely agree.
Yeah.
But I know that you know, and Paul knows, you sell an animal or you sell a reptile, but you... That's a bit of your heart that you've given to that reptile. So then you surely want to make sure it's going to the right place.
Yeah. No, it is a difficult one. It definitely. It's I don't know if there is a right or wrong, because I know we'll keep going back to Paul in the comments, but he said like the way they've sold it, the animal will live, but and then they've got their sale, or they might not. And he's saying like 500 quid for everything puts people off, whereas 250 quid for like a mess setup, and then someone's in the hobby and they potentially get hooked. I do get it. I just I don't know. It must be like a morals thing as opposed to a sales thing.
Yeah. So moral thing is person over profit.
Yeah.
So you know, the reptile over what you make, but then when you start getting to bigger companies, it's the other way around. It's profit first and then people.
Yeah.
So you know, I think that's why, I mean, you know, it goes back to the breeding in small batches. I see no problem with it because you don't flood the market. You might have somebody up north that's a specialist in pieds, and you go, okay, I want a pied, I'm going to go to them. Or you have somebody who's really good at tree monitors, so you go, oh, I'm going to go over to them. Or so you have your little groups of people that are really good at one specific thing, rather than everyone that's trying to do everything and churn out loads of stuff.
Yeah. What we're saying, let's have a look at the comments quickly and then we'll crack on. So they're saying, lots of people in the comments are saying it's the big numbers that's scaring people off, which I understand. So like, so the animal's only $40, but the lights and the viv make it $550, and then that's terrifying. And Paul says, if mum and dad aren't into it, they're not going to drop big money on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I understand, I suppose, but it's a shame. But I could know that. Yeah. Fiona says, dogs. Yeah, you're going to have to tell us about the dogs now.
Yeah, I've got two Romanian rescue dogs called Pig and Luna.
Fantastic.
And as you can hear, they are very vocal.
They've been very quiet for most of it. I'm down the end of the garden because I have got a husky, a Romanian rescue dog, and a Jack Russell, and they all don't ever shut up. They're so
what
loud.
A mix. Yeah. What a mix.
I know. They're all rescues and we love them, but they are really noisy, especially the husky. And she talks back at you, and if you tell her off, she tells you off, and you just, it's like having an argument with a toddler.
Oh, I get that with one of my dogs, Luna. You know, you give her a bit of a fuss and you go, right, okay, go away then. And she'll start growling at you as if to go, no, I'm not done yet.
Yeah, my husky does that.
But I am. No, it doesn't matter.
And she pulls your arm back to her. She's like, give me more love.
Yep.
Dear. Right. Let's stick. Anyway, but let's get back on track. So,
reptiles.
I know. Back to reptiles. I'm going to start a new podcast just about dogs, I think. If people are at home listening, and that we obviously, there's quite a lot National Centre for Reptile Welfare based, but that's fine. It's all, we like that sort of stuff. So, if people wanted to help, how can they help? Can they rescue, adopt, and foster? Can they come along? I presume there's lots of ways to help out.
There's so many ways. So donations first and foremost. Being a charity, it would not run without donations. Then you've got actually rehoming. So you can go down, you can look physically at the animals. You can find one of the volunteers that are there and go, oh, I wouldn't mind having a look at this. We'll get you out. Do a little bit of a talk about the animal. Are you sure you know about the setup and stuff like that? No, just turn up. Chris opens the doors reluctantly between 10 and 5, 7 days a week.
Cool. So people can rock up whenever they want.
People can rock up, come and say, like, you can just wander around and just see what's there. We've had people that it's been rainy and they've gone, oh, we're in the area. We thought we'd just turn up and have a look. Go for it.
I didn't know that.
And then, you know, if you like anything, you know, you can have a conversation with somebody and rehome them.
Yeah.
And then the last one is volunteering.
Do they offer fosters as well? Can you foster it if you're not sure to start with? Or?
So fostering is more for the people that are there all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
So people that Chris knows, because at the end of the day, he's giving the animal to yourself to look after, do the work with, nurture, and then bring back.
Yeah.
So fostering is a little bit harder, but again, not through the realms of not asking.
Yeah, yeah. Your wife, isn't she? She's saying, turn up at the weekends freely, but call beforehand during the week, just in case anybody's thinking about nipping over. I don't want to be on the podcast going, yeah, just turn up whenever you want.
just do it. Yeah.
Exactly is it again for Fiona who's asking?
So Hadlow College is in Tunbridge or Hadlow.
Yeah.
Just Google it and then it will take you there. There's signs and stuff, or if you get lost, contact us. And we'll walk out and greet you.
Yeah. Oh dear. And I tell you what, I've got Chris as a friend on Facebook, and I love watching him stuff. Chris posts hilarious stuff every day, and like it's very tongue in cheek a lot of the time. Like every day, it's like I bloody hate this, I bloody hate that. And I tell you what, I'm obsessed with the giant tortoises and just how much they make his ruin his day every day.
So the worst one is, did you see the videos of the red green iguana that was eating his flowers?
Yeah, that got out into like the raised bed and ate all the vegetables.
Yeah, that's Ziggy who lives with me now.
Okay. He'd had enough, like, take him.
Yeah, he just had enough. Well, Ziggy had eaten all of his flowers, so he thought, we'll go somewhere else. So, no, I mean, Ziggy's, he was there for a good long time. He was a bit of a star, so I always get, every so often we get a little message going, how's Ziggy doing? And so,
yeah,
you know, we always get people asking how he is. So
good. Paul said, have you had a big fat mangrove in recently? I'm a pretty mangrove monitor.
Not recently, within the last couple of, well, I say within the last month.
And a croc monitor. I don't know. I think Paul knows something that he's not, that I don't know. Yeah.
We'll chat. Yeah, we'll chat. Paul. That's fine. Yeah.
I don't want to get anyone in trouble.
Yeah, no, cool. No, they do have lots of different bits and pieces there. As always, but it always fluctuates.
Yeah,
always fluctuates. There are certain species that can't just go to people.
Yeah.
So if you've got Aldabras, they can't just go to somebody's house. You know, we'll vet the people. They can come and stay in the end of your garden, Ben.
To be fair, it's all fenced off. They actually could live in there. I've looked at it a few times. The only problem is the winter. I'm like. Could put a small like Wendy house with some heating in it, but my landlord would come around and go,
small.
Why the hell is it? Well, all right, a large
shed. Small?
A large shed.
Yeah.
I think my landlord would probably kick off if he comes around and there's a huge tortoise roaming around.
All you do is you tell him if you can move it, you can move him out.
Well, I'm only supposed to have one dog and we've got three, so I don't want to annoy him too much.
But no, there are lots of ways that people can help along with a reptile charity.
Yeah.
Even just turning up and saying.
Oh, go on, Karen.
Go on.
I was going to say, I'll pop the link for the National Centre for Reptile Welfare in the description as well. So if anyone does want to go and donate, you guys can go and do
that. Super. Bless you. Thank you.
That's right. I'm always happy to help. Even if you can't afford to donate, you can always share and stuff, can't you?
Somebody might look at it and go, okay, I'm going to share that on my page, and then their sister's mother's brother's cousin or something goes, oh, actually that's a good idea, but that's local.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know that. I could just go turn up at weekends and have a look around, so you're not that, well, it's not that far from me, so I may head over there
if you're down Brighton way.
Yeah, sort of that
area. So I'm close,
Horsham is the closest place to me.
Oh yeah, no, you're not far at all.
Yeah. So definitely make.
There you go.
Right, my last question before we start to wrap up is, obviously you do a lot with the local community. You've got a lot of cool stuff going on at the moment. Mm-hmm. I keep seeing you chatting about. So what's sort of up and coming for you? What have you got in the calendar coming up soon?
So we have 2 days next month that was sold out, which is the first time we've ever done an event like this, which is at Ruth's Lost Gardens in Sevenoaks. So we're going to be there. It's a reptile trail. So you come over and you purchase a trail sheet. You can go around the garden, see all the gardens, come back, and then actually handle our animals as well. So where it's over 2 days, we're going to have lots of different types of animals. You might have a tegu one day and a boss monitor the next day or something. So it's going to be a difference between the two of them. Then we've got, I myself has got another podcast coming up, which will be going up, but that's more on the other side of RDJ, so how it happened and more sort of like the paperworky bit rather than the actual doing it bit.
Yeah.
Which is good. And then it's just finding ways that we can expand ourselves and just sort of get the reach out there. And, yeah. You know, I say spread the love, really.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. What other podcast are you on? You're welcome. I don't mind if you want to share. Or if you don't want to share.
Not allowed to at the moment.
Oh, that's exciting.
But like always, as soon as I get given the go-ahead, then I'm sure it'll annoy everyone by coming up every 10 minutes.
That's all right, because Paul's just said in the comments that he can go on his podcast as well if you want, which is nice, because I haven't even been invited on that, and he's been on here three times.
Excellent, me first.
I did get to feed.
We'll do like a little.
I'm not complaining. Yeah,
we'll do like a little round table. And we'll just like have a couple of us on.
Yeah.
I was just going to say lots of little things coming up, fates and fairs and stuff around the area. We always share and post about where we're going to be. So
yeah,
you know, please feel free to come along, or if you've got questions about anything, just shoot us a message in the social media stuff.
Yeah. The Lost Gardens event, you said you're completely sold out now as well. So if people want to go, it's too late now.
Both days. So we sold out the first day. It was going to be a 1-day event. We sold out in less than 2 days.
Yeah.
And then they asked us to do a second day, which we said we would do. And that sold out in just over 2 days.
That's mad.
And they actually said to us they've never had anything like that before. So, which is lovely, because it just proves to us that we're on the right path, we're on the right track, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure that once you've done the event, if the feedback's good, there'll be plenty more options in the future to do it again as well. So, if
fingers crossed.
This time, there should be time to do it. Hopefully, in the future.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Cool. Right, before we wrap up, was there anything else that you wanted to touch on? Be it through RDJ or the National Center for Reptile Welfare. If not, we will ask the wrap-up question. Has been going for about an hour now.
No, I think I've waffled on enough.
Fantastic. Right, so the 2024 wrap-up question that featured the first time on the last episode. If you could give your 10-year-old self a piece of advice, what would that advice be?
Don't rent a flat in Hove.
Okay. I feel like there's a whole story behind that. Like, that is a story.
That's a whole nother
another day.
Yeah. That's a whole nother podcast. sorry, that came out a bit too quick, didn't it? It would probably be just do something that you enjoy.
Yeah.
Do something you enjoy. But also when people are talking, take time to listen, because we seem to respond, but we don't actually listen.
Yeah, I completely
agree. So,
I think since starting I think, although I can't speak properly because my words just don't seem to come out, I think my listening and taking what people are saying is a lot more, it's a lot better than it was. And not only that, I feel like the conversation is getting better with each episode as well. So it's great. So, yeah, good. I like it. Nice advice.
Less missed words.
Yeah, to be fair, the words are in my brain. They just don't get to my mouth for some reason. I don't know what's going on.
It's just that bit that's not quite, that's fair.
That's not the right comment. Where's the comment? There we go. Right, we're just finishing, so Riddler's finally turned up. Don't go back and listen, because we definitely weren't bagging you up earlier.
Yeah, no, please don't listen, Riddler, please. Yeah. We love you.
thanks for finally showing up, though. Right, so there we have it. Before we go, where can people find you?
So we are on Instagram and Facebook. We're also on our own website. www.rdjreptiles.co.uk. You can Google us, it comes up with the Google business page thing, or you can find us at weekends at the National Center of Reptile Welfare.
Yeah, which to be fair, I'm going to come along soon. I'm sure I can find a free weekend soon to pop over. I'll give you a message and we'll come and have a chat. And
we'll get down there. But yeah, that's where you can find us. We're always open for, you know, questions, or if you've got any concerns or anything at all, please do let us know.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Right, I'm going to kick you out of the studio. I will finish off the podcast, but don't go anywhere because we'll have a quick catch-up before we go completely. But thank you very much. And like you said, if anybody wants to go and find any more info, that the links are in the description, and or just go and Google RDJ Reptiles. Cool. I will chat to you very soon, mate. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
No worries. Right, there we have it. Another episode in the bag. If you enjoyed the episode, or even if you didn't, please don't forget to drop a comment and leave a thumbs up before you disappear. If you do want to support the podcast a little bit more, like I mentioned at the top of the show, there is a Patreon link in the show notes down below. So that's all that's left for me to say. I've been your host, Ben McIntyre, and this has been another episode of the Reptile Chat podcast. I will see you next time.